I wanted to talk about hydrogen and with its relation to combustion engines. Now, this was something you contacted another show here at CIUT about, and they
yes.
forwarded you to me. And I was interested in your kind of proposal about what you wanted to talk about. But perhaps so you have some benefits here that you've outlined as far as hydrogen fuel cells and hydrogen gas injection type technology. One of the things that I mentioned earlier was that this is something where I feel like it was making a lot of noise in the car companies and the tech industry a few years ago, and it seems to have died off. Would you agree with that? Is this still an up-and-coming technology, or have the powers that be somewhat abandoned it, at least for now?
Well, I think I've been following a lot about the fuel cell technology, and to my understanding, they've done things with trials on public transit buses. This particular technology actually is dealing more in the transport truck business, because obviously transport trucks deliver our groceries, building materials, concrete, and all those other things in our lives. We depend on it so much. So this was particularly targeted at this company developed over the past decade a unit that can produce from distilled water hydrogen gas, a small amount, and that hydrogen gas is brought into the engine of the truck, and it helps it burn the fuel more efficiently or more completely. And by doing that, the truck gets a little bit more power, and it also cleans up the environment. Diesel fuel is a matter of, it's an oil. So obviously from oil you get soot and all sorts of pollution. So this is a completely different technology altogether than the fuel cell. And this company has FedEx as one of its customers already, because they couldn't deliver products in California due to the emission standards that are so high. So this has worked great for them to allow them to go into the state of California and do their deliveries and pickups.
So has this technology been, so it hasn't been outright required in any areas. Is it part of the reason why we haven't seen that much penetration into the auto market, though? Is it because it's sort of only affordable or effective on certain types of vehicles, or is this simply a marketing issue? Why don't we see, if it's so effective, why don't we see it all over the place?
Well, one of the big things is basically the truck has a small unit on it, a system. It takes distilled water, it electrocutes it to create the hydrogen gas. Now, with water, as you know, we live in Canada. In wintertime, water freezes. In hot climates, because you're also electrocuting the water, if you have excessive heat, the water overboils. So to develop that technology to control the water temperature, it seems to be ridiculously expensive. Now, these units cost on average about $15,000, but it's a small expense when you think that large trucks only get about 4 to 6 miles per gallon, and
wow.
they consume
That's
on
an
average per month.
Number.
It is very low. It is very awful. Where a pickup truck does around 20 miles per gallon, and cars that are very efficient get around 30 miles per gallon. So trucks are very bad because you consider that they are pulling a load. Mm-hmm. So what's happening is, again, I think the cost is a big factor here. So for now, the technology has been developed. It's perfected. It works, but it has a very high cost factor due to all the things you need to not just electrocute the water, keep it from freezing, keeping it from overboiling, and all that.
So would you just go through, you gave me a list here of six benefits of the technology, if you want to just overview them for the listeners.
Yeah, of course. Well, the number one thing, of course, is, if you look at it from an environmental standpoint, because diesel fuel is an oil creates a lot of soot and particulate debris. It goes in there while it's reducing the soot because it's causing the oil to completely burn. It's also going to be, as a byproduct, it's also going to be giving the truck more power. And also the trucks, as they are already, they have emission devices on them to control the pollution that they're making. And these emission devices also get clogged with the soot and the carbon buildup. So by removing it at the source, it's going to keep the maintenance costs down. And, of course, the other benefit is, again, the trucks, on average, they've said, a minimum, the company guarantees 10% fuel savings. But they found through all the customers they have that they're doing between 15% and 20%. So if you think about it, if they go further every month or pay $1,000 less on fuel, after about a year and a half they've paid off the unit, and the rest of the 9 years is all gravy.
Unfortunately, Sandra, we've got a minor technical error. I'm actually going to have the technician call you back.
Oh.
So if you want to pause there for a second, we'll get you right back on the line. But folks, we're just going to take a really, really short music break while we switch phones here, so just bear with us, and we'll be right back in like 30 seconds with Sandra.
Whatever happened to all the love? Something's coming down from up above. But I'm not.
All right, and we're back. Sorry about that, Sandra. Do I have you back on the line?
It's only technology.
There we go. It's only good when it works, you know.
Yeah, good when it works rather than it doesn't.
So, sorry to interrupt you. If you want to go back, we were just talking about some of the benefits of this technology in general, and what some of the opportunities for the future might be.
Well, I guess, again, the benefits was fuel savings, which then justify the unit. Of course, the engine runs a lot cleaner. Instead of having residual oil that didn't get burnt fully, it's causing the fuel to burn completely and therefore eliminating the emissions, greenhouse gases, the soot, and the carbon, which is means the truck can go longer on the oil. The biggest polluter of engine oil is the soot and all the byproducts of combustion that go down into the engine oil. So that's the benefits as well. Trucks have a lot of emission controls on it that are getting clogged by the soot and the carbon buildup. So by eliminating the soot at the source where the fuel is, where the combustion is happening, therefore it's going to allow for the emission control devices to have a longer life for replacement.
Now, one of the things that that I've been aware of when we're talking about, as I was mentioning earlier, and I've mentioned a few times on the show, one of the things I'm particularly, my specific interest is alternative energy and transportation. So one of the things I've been aware of is that a lot of the time companies will hesitate, especially big companies like auto manufacturers, will sort of hesitate or have to guess about future technology because they don't know how the market's going to react. So when we had just sort of, you know, the only thing out there was the combustion engine and kind of traditional gas engine, then it was simply a matter of you know, improving this technology and making refinements and making it stronger or more efficient based on market indicators, but they were essentially working with the same technology. The push for drastic fuel economy increases and or concern about the environment, which I wouldn't necessarily group in the same group of motivators,
yeah.
Two separate things, has resulted in a lot of innovation, but we're at a point where there hasn't sort of been a clear winner. So we've got, if you look on the roads today, I've noticed a couple here in Toronto TTC buses that say hydrogen on the side. I've seen a few smaller vehicles that have things about, you know, biofuel capable and 97% ethanol capable and hybrids. There's full electric.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all these technologies. So with respect to the hydrogen, is this something that would apply to any type of engine, or is this sort of a path? So what I'm asking essentially is, you know, is this gas plus hydrogen leads to full hydrogen eventually path, or can, as opposed to pursuing hybrids and thereby leading to full electric, or is this a technology that can sort of be applied widely to wherever the industry goes?
Well, I think, I mean, to your point, we already have electric cars, and the problem with electric cars, they don't have the range. So they put a smaller gas engine to charge the battery, because otherwise all electric cars wouldn't be able to go 400 kilometers on a charge. This technology can run on its own as an aid to current combustion engines to improve the efficiency, to improve the power. The only thing, I guess, what's holding it back is, I guess, I mean, of course, hydrogen gas is explosive, as we know. So do you want to have a tank of hydrogen gas in the back of your trunk powering your car? That would be an interesting question. But, I mean, in this particular unit, it produces such controlled amounts of hydrogen. It doesn't store it. It just makes it as it's used, and then it's done. So it is a standalone unit. But, again, what seems to add to the cost, and automakers, I think, on the whole, are fairly, they try to cut costs as much as possible on their cars, that, you know, how do you keep it from freezing? How do you keep it from boiling over? What happens when the water, distilled water, gets low and you have to top it up? So those are a few of the constraints, I think, as it has in terms of using it in an automotive car application at this time.
So perhaps for the car enthusiasts, I don't know if Ari Rabinovich, one of our occasional show helpers, previous volunteer show helpers, is the gentleman who came with me to the International Auto Show this year. So for those folks that maybe what we're getting at here is that maybe don't hold out for your next vehicle for a full hydrogen or hydrogen, you know, personal vehicle at the moment, but maybe this is something that, due to the increased cost, maybe has to filter its way down through the transportation industry first. To allow the sales to sort of generate revenue enough that they can that these models end up getting refined and become cheaper.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I would also say for a car, since the car engine is so much smaller than the truck engine, maybe instead of having a unit that electrocutes the water, because that seems to be where all the cost is keeping the water at a certain temperature and keeping it from freezing. What about getting my personal thoughts on this is, if we could use a system on a car so that you just have a small little screw-in bottle, like, I don't know if you know the propane you buy to do plumbing at home, a small little canister. Mm-hmm. If you could buy one of those, screw it into your car, and it lasts 2 months, that would be, I think, doable, and you could buy it at Canadian Tire.
And I've seen some the issue around hydrogen storage tanks and why they moved into the electrolysis of to generate hydrogen was the problem of storing it and tank size and stuff like that. So I also, and this is a couple years out of date, but I remember seeing a lot of research around Swiss cheese type micro materials, materials that increase surface area inside the tanks by essentially creating a very micro version of like Swiss cheese to give it more places so that they could cram kind of more hydrogen. So there's a variety of ways to attack this problem. It sounds, from what you've heard though, is the electrolysis angle more what is being used these days as opposed to the compressed tanks?
Well, in the large trucks, it is, I guess, due to the nature of the volume of hydrogen that the truck needs. It's easier to produce it from electrocuting the water. Again, they can put a big tank of water without any issue rather than putting a huge tank of hydrogen gas, which is explosive, as we all know, in large quantities.
Mm-hmm. Hindenburg, so, anyone, in case they missed that.
Yeah. So in this case, I think for trucks, this is probably the best way to go. It just would be good to see the price point start to come down on this. But obviously, a lot of research and development over the past decade that this company has put into getting it to work well is great. I think when they first started out, they didn't have any way of keeping the water from freezing. So for 6 months, it didn't work because it was frozen. And then in the summertime, you got 6 months use out of it, and 6 months you didn't because it froze. So now they've had to build extra technology and systems to keep the water from freezing.
Now, we've got only a couple of minutes here left, so I've got a little bit of a thoughtful question here. I'm not trying to bait you into a specific answer. I'm not even sure what my answer is on this, but it's maybe some food for thought here right before we have to go.
Okay.
What do you think of the idea that, you know, we talk a lot about in this program about climate change and there's a lot of the reasons to, you know, reduce carbon emissions and stuff like that. A lot of the numbers that we're hearing now is that we have things like, you know, 10 years to make a major change, 6 years to make a major change, 14 years to make a major change. What do you think of the idea that you know, instead of trying to clean cars, we really need all the energy, all the movement, all the innovation needs to be moving away from your fuel-based things at all. The argument for full electric or nothing, you know, invest in electric and elect in public transportation, or even better yet, just only invest in research for really well-defined public transportation systems so that we don't need the vehicles because, you know, it's as opposed to creating a band-aid, just, you know, fixing the problem and the hydrogen being somewhat of like a cleaning up the fuel as a band-aid solution when really what we need to be doing is eliminating fuel or maybe even eliminating, you know, the prevalence of personal transportation altogether. What do you think about that?
I think that's a fantastic idea. It sounds like the gasoline engine, combustion engine has been around for decades and decades. We just seem to be trying to optimize it and optimize it and optimize it. I mean, really, the cleanest sources, of course, as you probably know, is probably using propane or even natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
That burns clean. It's very clean, good for the environment. But again, that using a compressed gas in wintertime has issues because the gas from being a gas turns into liquid and it has a hard time starting. So, I know that that's always been a challenge, but maybe solar is the way to go if we had enough sun. I totally agree with you. If there was another way of doing it, and again, or some of these fuel cells, but I've heard, you know, the popularity hasn't been going anywhere on those lately. Again, due to the cost of, you know, once you make millions of them, the cost goes down, but if you're only making a few thousand of them, the cost is so high.
In something where you know you're trying to develop innovation, governments doing things like using policy to quote unquote they say in the business world pick the winners is a bad strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But and I would agree with that. I think that you know all the as a in addition to everything else, I'm also an armchair science history enthusiast. And one of the things that I'm aware of is that some of the most revolutionary, some of the biggest ideas that have ever changed the world all came from pure interest-based exploration, not government or corporation-funded research.
Mm-hmm.
The most world-changing, earth-shattering discoveries have almost exclusively been made by people doing things just because they were interested, and they did it in their free time, or they did it. There was no paycheck that they were looking for at the end of the day, and those are the folks that changed the world. So I'm sort of sympathetic to the idea that it really excites me to see so many different types of technologies and stuff coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing at the end of that comes back is, man, if we only had 200 years to see how this played out. But unfortunately, we don't. We've got like five.
Yes.
So yes. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. Like I get excited and then I get disappointed, kind of all at the same time when I hear about this sort of thing.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you read about it, but I mean, apparently a long time ago, somebody made a great battery that would do a fantastic job of, you know, having a car go 400 or 500 kilometers, and the petroleum companies bought it and put it on the shelf because it's a threat to the petroleum industry. So
yep.
Since you're talking politics, there are also other issues that if you come out with this great supercar that doesn't use gasoline, you're going to have a price on your head.